Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Ladies and gentlemen, Election Day, local Election Day, is a week from today, Tuesday, the 4th of March, and City Council is going to be voted for. We have today the City Council candidates from Districts 2 and 3. All four have agreed to be on the show today, and we're going to talk to all of them. I'd like right now to welcome Rosemary Romero. She is from District 2. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. I hope you're doing well also.
Thank you. So why did you choose to run? It's a fascinating race because in Districts 2 and 3, there's only one incumbent.
It's true that there's only the one incumbent, and I've heard from other folks that this is such a quiet kind of election. It's actually kind of boring, I've heard from other folks. But quite frankly, I think that it's a great opportunity for people like myself and Robbie to, you know, roll their sleeves up and give back to their community. That's what I do for a living. I do public involvement, facilitation, environmental mediation, and it seems like a great opportune time to give back to my community. And you know, we'll see how this election turns out.
Now, when you say public mediation, what is it? Facilitation?
It's a couple of different things. Is I get hired by agencies, by public types of organizations to do public involvement, particularly around policy issues. So, for example, I'm working with Albuquerque County and the city of Albuquerque in Bernalillo County to develop environmental justice policy that will affect air quality. So I meet with neighborhood associations, I meet with industry.
Now, environmental justice is the whole realm of ideas that you shouldn't put the polluting factory in the poor neighborhood.
Correct.
It's that kind of justice you're talking about.
Right. And what I'm working on is cumulative impacts with them, because it's in that particular area, it's a neighborhood, the South area, and then there's factories and there's auto recyclers. Now, they're working on the issues together, but it's that kind of public involvement. And then if I get directly involved with agencies to resolve a conflict, like in Taos, I'm working with Taos, the town of Taos, the Taos County, and other municipalities in Taos County area to resolve issues on a regional water plan. So I'm an actual mediator working with agencies to resolve an issue in order to have a water plan in place, and that's going along really well. Now, facilitation, I do strategic planning, helping organizations do strategic planning, board development, helping organizations make better decisions. So it's a broad spectrum of skills that comes out of conflict resolution.
What do you see as the problems in Santa Fe that you'd most like to get your hands dirty doing, working on?
There's a couple of issues that I'd like to focus. I have worked on every issue imaginable since, before 1994, including the general plan. And quite frankly, the issues from 1994, if you look back even further, they haven't changed. They are around crime, they're around affordable housing, they're around water, they're around planning issues. And the same for 2008. It seems to me that the top issue that I'm hearing from folks in the surrounding neighborhoods around crime, and if people feeling safe in their homes, quality of life issues. So I think we're on the right track with the police department getting the number of people in. There's another, the right, it's just not the right folks, but it's getting folks who are skilled already hitting the ground running. Now, we should know that when we get police officer in, even if they're fully trained in January, they really aren't on the street till like almost July. So it's a long lag time in between. But I think that if folks start to feel like the police department's really taking seriously the issues of crime, I think we will see a greater reduction. I think some of it is also related to drug abuse. A good part of it is drug abuse, and we're seeing crime hitting neighborhoods where it's easy to take things like stereo, CD players, cameras, stereos, jewelry, money. But I do think that there's a couple of things that we can do to address the crime.
Now, you grew up here, you're born and raised in Santa Fe, and you've seen the city change tremendously over the years that you've been living and working here. What of those changes do you think are positive and negative? And I know we can't roll the clock back, but what would you like to see in terms of keeping the essence of Santa Fe intact.
You know, I will say that we all change. You know, we personally change. Hopefully that we get through some of the things in our lives that aren't as great, and we keep working on them. And certainly Santa Fe, as you've noted, has changed. But it seems to me that in the work that I've done in Santa Fe, one of the things that I think is really important has been that this is a city of neighborhoods. We have over 300 neighborhoods in Santa Fe, and people say, well, where are you from? What neighborhood do you live in? And even though the downtown area seems kind of stagnant at times, the neighborhoods are more vibrant. Not all, you know, and I think some of them need help in building capacity, learning how to make decisions. But this is a city of neighborhoods, and I think that those need to be preserved the way people think they should. I don't think that change is, you know, it's going to happen, but it's the how it happens that I think is critical, in that folks have a voice in that change. So that's one of the biggest changes that I've seen. And I think looking back, is I think local folks would say when St. Francis Drive went through that Hickox Paseo de Peralta, that was one of the first urban renewal major changes that affected a neighborhood. And I'd hate to see something like that happen again. I don't think it will. I think that was part of urban renewal. But I think the potential for neighborhoods to be affected, particularly with infill issues, is really great.
Now, in a negative way with infill issues, or what do you mean?
There's two specific infill projects that I think were detrimental to what the intention of infill is and continues to be. The intention, as we will recall, is that...
Now, infill means, instead of having urban sprawl, taking a city and developing open space so there's
correct.
More housing.
A more affordable housing, you know, reining in our urban boundary. Those are the two main issues. Or that's what infill is about. But what we've seen is kind of a springboard for folks to jump on open lands and build inappropriately. Now, lands that are expensive aren't our problem. If somebody has bought an expensive piece of land, they say, hey, I've got to build three, four stories because I've got to make my money back. That's not the city's problem. And I think that's some of what's occurred, is that the economics didn't play out. So folks built in areas that were bigger than what was appropriate. So that included issues around traffic, size, you know, the massing. Pacheco Street's a good example of an area that's got mixed use, but the kind of development that occurred there is inappropriate. It makes that street a canyon. It's right on top of another building, an old historic adobe building. So, you know, that's a good example to me of two buildings that could have been done differently, could have been massed differently, could have been set back from the road differently. I think they've got enough parking, but those are issues in other parts of the city, is parking, traffic. I think we do need to take those issues into consideration when we approve any infill projects, is what's the impact on the surrounding neighbors.
And neighborhood input into that.
Exactly.
Do you see immigration as a problem in Santa Fe, and what do you think about the situation of immigrants from Latin America in Santa Fe?
Well, this city has, I think it's been an immigrant population from the 1800s. You know, we've had the French coming through and that influence, and we've had the Spanish influence, the Native American influence, certainly in the last couple of years we've had, because of, I think, economic downturns and quality of life issues in Latin America, we're seeing much more of an impact of folks coming into the Santa Fe area, which is very welcoming. So I think it's one that it's a national issue for sure, impacts Santa Fe. And I think where I think it affects us most profoundly, and it's not just immigrant populations, but it's anybody without health care. The hospital, I'm on the board of St. Vincent's Hospital, and the hospital doesn't turn anybody away. It serves everyone. It's a nonprofit organization. So folks who don't have regular health care insurance, anybody, immigrants, others, if they show up at the hospital, they get treatment. And I think that that starts to really take a toll on everyone and all of the services that are provided. So we think we need to look carefully at those issues. On the south side of town,
I mean,
so
what do you do about that? You can't deny somebody health care who needs
absolutely not
their appendix out or whatever.
Right. Absolutely not. I think that's what the hospital does, is we provide health care. But you'll see on the south side of town, which is the area that we are experiencing the most growth, we have schools that were designed for a specific number of students, and that's where folks live, particularly immigrant population, because it's more affordable. So the schools are taking the greatest impact on the numbers of students that they're serving. Several years ago, Jose Villegas and I actually did mediation for free. It was part of our community service that we were paired together to do mediation with local Hispanic kids and immigrant kids. And I think it's an issue of understanding each other. You know, people feel like others coming in that they get less than. But to me, there's also the creativity and the vibrancy that occurs. I don't see it as a negative. I think there's the how it gets dealt with, and particularly the schools are one that we need to pay attention to, because that's where the majority of growth is happening, is on the south side.
We've got just a minute left open for you to say whatever you would like to tell our listeners here on KSFR.
Great. I live and work in District 2, and I know the issues in District 2, and certainly they are around, they're used to a very active counselor, but I also know the issues from a policy side, and I'm really looking forward to working on this. One of the biggest issues I think that's facing Santa Fe is the Department of Transportation complex that's going to be occurring probably in the next couple of years. Right now nothing is occurring, it's in this kind of slow place, but it's 25 acres or so of development that's going to occur, and this will be one of the largest impacts on Santa Fe that I think as a council we need to pay attention to, and it's a state land, it's owned by the state. However, I think that there's a lot of influence that we can wield from the city perspective and really work on the issues together. I think we've got more ability now to work together on this large development. It is, bar none, going to be one that affects Cerrillos Road, Cordova Road, the surrounding neighborhoods here. So I really want to pay attention to that. You know, if elected and on the council, it's an issue that I think will be so important that I will pay attention.
Rosemary Romero is candidate for City Council District 2. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
We're going to take a little break right now, and we'll be talking to the other candidate, Robbie Dobbins, in just a moment. Stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Robbie Dobbins. He is a City Council candidate for District 2. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte. It's my honor.
Now, this is you and Rosemary Romero running for the seat in District 2. Both of you are new candidates, no incumbents in this race. Why did you decide to run for City Council?
I made a humorous comment the other night at a forum, which wasn't exactly true, but I don't know whether you were familiar with it, that my lobotomy didn't work last summer.
Oh, dear.
So I've been thinking about this for a while. I'm very concerned about the direction Santa Fe has been taken over especially the last 8-10 years. I find certain aspects of city government has not been conducive to the Santa Fe that I knew as a child.
Now, you've been here since you were a very small child. What do you mean? What kind of changes are you seeing that you don't like?
There's a certain strain and depth of divisiveness in the community that is unneeded. Santa Fe is known for its unity and its uniqueness, and not only that, but its creativity that was bred out of its diversity. And I feel that has been tainted over the years, and there's no reason for it to happen, because we're the same people we were decades ago. And we can recreate that spirit in the new century, and that's one of my goals. My other main point was the bleeding of our youth from our community. I felt like, in many instances, I felt that our best and our brightest were leaving our community, and that was taken away from, you know, what people know and the world knows is Santa Fe.
Well, it is certainly the case that young people just cannot afford the housing here. You're a realtor. What do you do about that? Do you go against the market forces of capitalism and institute a socialist state?
I think you can probably embrace some of the market statistics or market trends if we have the will as a city to apply ourselves to that particular problem. I mean, there's a few solutions. Right now, we've created an ordinance, an affordable housing ordinance, which it's sort of like the Bush administration's Blue Sky Initiative. It's totally contrary to what it's designed to do. Back in the early 90s, during the development of Tierra Contento, which is an award-winning community, by the way, we had a plan and a program that included the developers and the realtors and the city and some nonprofits. And you know what? It worked. We provided inventory. We had good pricing, and we empowered the buyers. Right now, under this plan, we're creating buyers that are essentially glorified renters. And the benefits, if you looked at it from a business model, the benefits flow to the city. They don't flow to any particular group, and it's not working. There's no inventory.
Inventory means houses.
Houses. And right now we have some unique opportunities in the affordable housing realm. One is that we're going to have to break the mold of qualification. We need to get our workforce in place. We need to get the police, the firemen, the nurses, the teachers. They should be the first people we address because they're going to be the glue in our community. And so we've unrolled a couple of plans that have been relatively controversial within our discussions during this race.
To address affordable housing.
Right. For the workforce population, not necessarily for the categories as spelled out by the Santa Fe Housing Opportunity Program.
Now, crime is a problem that everybody is speaking of, crime related to, in many cases, to drug addiction, burglary, and that kind of thing. Your daughter is a policeman, so to speak, police person. So you have maybe a little bit more insight into that than some people. But what would you do about crime? What are the roots of this type of crime? What do you do about it?
Well the roots could be a several-hour discussion on this radio station and maybe more radio stations, which I think as a society we should talk about and discuss. But one of the most cost-effective ways to keep crimes down in neighborhoods, it's a common sense approach to a problem that is the major problem as far as the people in District 2 is concerned. And I don't know whether it's reality or the perception, but they claim it as a problem. Is to put a policeman, a squad car, in every neighborhood in this city. In my daughter's neighborhood, there is no crime. And one of the reasons there is not is because she lives in Santa Fe and she parks her car there and doesn't need to drive it 100 and some odd miles every day. One of the stories that she always tells me is that one of her associates came up to her and their neighbor said, "Oh my goodness, this is the safest neighborhood in the city. There's three Santa Fe police cars, there's a sheriff's department car, and there's a state police car." Unfortunately, that was Rio Rancho.
Ah, well, so if you have a neighborhood and there's one police car, I mean, does that really deter crime?
You know what? You'd be surprised because a lot of it is just the perception of safety or the perception of crime. Right now, devoid of police cars in neighborhoods, the perception of crime is more predominant than anything else. And I'm not saying that it's going to prevent crime, but I guarantee you it'll hamper it, and it's very cost effective because a policeman doesn't work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even though right now with the staffing, they could. So it's just the perception. It's just one small item to try to solve our crime situation. The roots of crime they're deep, and a lot of it is an economic disconnect within our community where we're having the haves and the have-nots, and somehow we have to bridge that, and we have to bridge that in many ways. One is to have a deep and long-lasting connection with our youth, So we have to take care of them. And without that...
How do you do that?
And I think there's, in many ways, I mean, there's some programs that are out there right now that we have to definitely support. You know, the community centers for children, and one that's dear to my heart is Warehouse 21. And I think the community should be in total support of that. And I'll strive to be totally in support of that. We also have to offer them opportunities for the future, and I know that the city council does not have a direct effect on you know, the educational needs of our children, but I can tell you we have a bully platform that we can explain in our community some of the necessities for educational advancement.
We're talking to Robbie Dobbins, and he is candidate for City Council District 2. Do you see immigration as a problem, and how do you think that the city of Santa Fe should relate to its immigrants from Latin America?
That's a difficult question. The city, by law, has a relatively limited reach to deal with this problem. I think the city has done a relatively good job of embracing immigrants. I mean, I personally think the culture brought by people that have come here is great. You know, after all, our families came here. Everybody's an immigrant at some root. We have a national problem with this. Yeah, there's no policy at the top. Some of the statements that are coming out on the national level, in my opinion, are repulsive. So you create a class of people within a community, and this problem stretches all over the country, and they have no legal rights. And so they have to operate within their social structure in a whole different way than we do. That obviously is going to cause friction, and it's going to cause conflict. So it causes it on many levels. It could result in crime. It could result on cost to some of the services the city provides. But the problem has to come from the top. I think the immigrants have to be integrated in our society. And once they are, I think the problems will disappear.
So you... As we've discussed, I mean, you are very interested in issues of housing. There is a reality that we are living in a globally warming desert where the water supply is non-infinite. How do you put limits on growth, if you do, so that, you know, at some point, 20, 30, 40, whatever years, 5 years from now, our faucets don't run dry?
There's always that possibility, and there's a high potentiality that'll occur. I think Santa Fe has taken a lot of great steps. I mean, it's one of the most water-conserving communities in the United States. I've made a couple of proposals. I mean, there's a couple of issues out there that will deeply affect the city of Santa Fe. One is, and this is from a romantic point of view, from the time when I was a youth, which was a couple of years ago, I want to reopen the 2 Mile Reservoir. When they ripped that down, I thought that was a large bruise to the city. It not only provided the most pure and inexpensive form of water to our community, but now there's other issues that are surrounding that. One is the restoration of the Santa Fe River. And there's a couple plans on the books right or being talked about in our community that I would have to oppose. One is because the watershed and the canyons hold the most purest form of water and least expensive, there's some people that want to drain them to restore the river. So what I proposed was, you know, rebuilding the 2 Mile Reservoir Perhaps.
Which is where?
It's right at the end of Canyon Road where Cerro Gordo intersects. And 7 years ago, it was there. And when the city transferred, when the PNM transferred the water company to the city, they ripped it down. And we can go into that at some other point. And I think that if we're going to do a combination of things that have to do with water, then we dam part of the Alameda and then we restore the river that way. The Buckman Field needs to be recharged, so it's the Buckman diversion project needs to get in full gear, and then our further efforts in conservation will always be supreme.
Robbie Dobbins is candidate for City Council District 2. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We're going to have a couple more candidates in just a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Martin Lujan. He is running for City Council in District 3. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Now, why did you decide to run for City Council?
Well, there's many reasons why I've decided to run, but I think one of the most important is that, you know, being a native Santa Fean, brought up in District 3, and just representing the people of my work on the Board of Education, I felt compelled to run because of the lack of attention that I believe is not given to the residents of District 3. You know, the safety issue that we... public safety, which is a top priority of not only the residents of District 3, but the community in itself, was something that says, you know, we need someone that's going to stand up and have a strong voice to change.
What would you specifically do about, first of all, what public safety issues are you talking about, and what would you do?
Well, public safety, if we look at the comparisons, there's a CompStat study that the police department does, and it does quarterly comparisons of what's happening in our city, whether, you know, in regards to residential burglaries and auto, commercial, to kind of break it down that way. The comparisons for the last four quarters have shown growth in residential crimes for the last four quarters.
And most of it burglary or other things as well?
Well, there's other things as well. But more specifically, the crimes, the burglary rates that are taking place in our community are those that are focused in on District 3. So things that I would do to address it is educate our community on how to report crimes, how to prevent crimes, and how to work together to create a stronger voice. Secondly would be the reallocation of resources and making resources a top priority for the Santa Fe PD so that they have the resources to do their job. I mean, we can ask them over and over and over to step up for us, but if they don't have the resources, they will never be able to accomplish that task. You know, something was very interesting at a coffee with the mayor about a month ago or so. They were talking about the number of police officers needed and how far we're, you know, the number that we're away from actually getting the meeting the goal of 157 officers. And we hear that over and over in our media that we're 10 short. But I asked the question, I said to the chief, given what is the actual need, given a community our size, that we need? And he says, well, that number's closer to 200 officers. And that there was a study that was conducted over 5 years ago that kind of gave the breakdown of the need and how we would need to grow progressively in regards to being able to have that police force. Well, that study has been tabled, and we're no better than we were a couple of years ago. And this community can no longer accept that. Because of the rising crime in our community, you could have the beautiful parks and all the amenities, but if you don't feel safe going out outside of your home, it's not good. And the last thing that I would do is accountability, for Charlotte. Accountability of our police chief. Given the resources, we need to be able to hold him accountable. Saying, okay, here you go. What next? The second thing is, as city councilors, I believe we need to be held accountable because once elected, you'll see the actions in place that Martin Lujan has taken. I absolutely would ask to be held accountable, saying, well, what have you done for police? Show me what you're doing for police and how we break that out. So accountability amongst the council is making it its number one priority, because as we've gone from forum to forum, that has actually been the discussion, public safety, public safety, public safety. And you know, I'm committing to make public safety my number one priority for a couple of reasons, like our community and for the residents of District 3.
So in District 3, I live in District 3, lots of, you know, it's a district on the west side. What would you actually do? I mean, you're talking about reallocating resources and having more police people. What do they actually do to prevent burglaries?
The residents? Or
no, the police. Law enforcement.
Well, I think it's about getting out there and creating an education movement, educating our community members, being involved in neighborhood watch groups, being present in communities. But it's, you know, there's another issue that ties along with this. You know, 75% of our officers are living outside of our Santa Fe community, so there's no locked-in investment.
Well, that leads to the question of affordable housing, which since the time you were born and raised here in Santa Fe, and you've seen the price of housing go from your children can live here to the point where your children have to leave. What do you do about it?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. There's system changes that need to be made at the city level, internal system changes that would allow these certain build-outs of communities to happen. And right now we hear a lot of concern from those industries saying that we can't get anything out, so there is no supply, so that supply and demand issue becomes a problem. If you can't create the homes for people to live in, then the price is going to be, it's actually going to drive the pricing higher. The second thing is that we need to create those partnerships. We talk about affordable housing and the needs that we need to make happen. It's creating partnerships with these programs. Create programs that are going to be able to put police officers in houses, firefighters in houses, teachers in houses. And I actually had made headway in that area 6 years ago. The district had, I think it was $300,000 that was allocated via the legislature to create a teacher. Well, we tied into a partnership with HomeWise, and now we've created programs. I mean, this is 6 years ago in the works, that we've been able to put teachers in homes. That piece was nationally recognized for its efforts because it was a creative effort on the part of a district to really provide housing opportunities for teachers. We need to do the same thing with the city. You know, we have the Northwest Quadrant coming out. We have any projects that we need to say, okay, folks, we're really taking a serious effort of trying to put our teachers, our employees, our professionals in homes. And part of it is looking at internal systems to make them, to streamline them so that we have, they're more efficient and they're able to get projects out. Secondly is looking at partnerships with our organizations that are going to be able to work hand in hand. And then thirdly, you know, making sure that everyone in our community is getting paid a living wage so they can afford these opportunities. So it's a tough a challenge, but I'm up to the challenge of making things different. And, you know, we can look back and, you know, things haven't changed. They're the same. It's the same old, same old. And you're right. As a native Santa Fean growing up in the downtown area and having experienced a lot of my friends that are moving out, it saddens me. And I look out, I have a 4-year-old son now, and I want him to be here to experience the culture, the heritage, everything that I was able to do growing up that is, you know, kind of seems a little bleak if we don't do something about it. So
we're talking to Martin Chavez, I'm putting the two together. Martin Lujan, Miguel Chavez is next, who is a candidate for City Council District 3. So you have the need for new housing. You also have the reality that there is a non-infinite supply of water.
Yes.
How do you limit growth, and when and how do you limit growth to keep up with our water supply?
Well, that's absolutely true. We need to make sure that we have the appropriate water resources in any development, which is seems to be the action that the council has taken. And I think that as we move forward and we create and we have an established and a stronger water portfolio, I mean, there's a lot of work that has been taking place in regards to water, where we're at, the status, and what the long-range plan is. You know, the completion of the Buckman diversion, acquiring more water resources, making sure that we tie that with the growth is absolutely key in moving forward. So I think is once we have the information, the data regarding the water, then we tie it to our permitting development office to say, okay, here we go. This is the vision. This is the plan for our community, because it does go hand in hand, and I absolutely realize that. And
And that drives up the price of housing, so it's a tough problem.
Well,
if you start to limit growth and say you can't, you know, we won't issue any more permits because there's not enough water.
Well, I think actually, you know, right now I don't think we have the handle on it at this point. Just to say that, I mean, once we have all of those things in place, we'll know what our water portfolio looks like. We should know what kind of development it looks like. The other pieces is working hand in hand with the county. How does it look? How do we expand in regards to our growth? And so having a strong water plan that is complete with the information that's needed for beyond 10 years, looking into our Santa Fe's future, and again, a strategic plan to saying, okay, how do we tie the growth of Santa Fe into that so it goes hand in hand? So we're not, this particular resource, which is so incredible in our area, that we're respectful of it.
We've got just 1 minute left. Anything you want to say to our listeners before we go?
No, you know, I want to thank the listeners, and I want to thank you for having us on the radio this morning. It's been a great race, and I look forward to serving the constituents of District 3. Having gone out there, I talk about police and fire as public safety as a priority of mine. I've been endorsed by the POA, which is the Police Officers Association, the FOP, Fraternal Order of Police, which is the retired police, and then, of course, the firefighters. And those individuals, I believe, know that it's time for change. It's time to take a serious look at providing the resources needed to make our community safe. And I plan on bringing a new voice and a new energy to city government.
Martin Lujan is candidate for city council in District 3. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with City Councilor Miguel Chavez. Stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Miguel Chavez. He is the incumbent running for City Council seat District 3. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. How are you doing? And good morning to all your listeners.
Good morning. Now, how did you you've been doing this for some time, City Council. How did you get into politics? How did you decide to run in the first place?
Well, I often say that it was a long and winding road, and I first started back in 71 when my father first, when he ran for city council. That was one of the first campaigns that I was involved in. And since then, I stayed involved and started attending city council meetings and got to understand a little bit better how city government works and how the city works and how the pieces fit together. So
what do you do outside of city council?
I'm self-employed. I have a small shop. I build furniture, cabinets, do woodworking, general woodworking.
Now, you've been here since you were a very small child. How do you see Santa Fe changing for better and for worse? And how do you see your role in the city council addressing those changes?
Well, I guess I see it changing for the better, because we're able to, as we've been growing, as the city has been changing, we've been able to support certain nonprofits and implement policy that benefits cluster industries like the publication industry, Warehouse 21, the nonprofits addressing youth issues. We've been able to invest in the rail yard, and we're developing that, and hopefully there will be a community benefit in the rail yard. We're just now completing, or will be completing in the next year, the new civic center, and hopefully that will function for both the industry needs and the community needs as well.
Well, that's a great example. How does the Civic Center benefit the community?
Well, it needs to, and I think the question is, the question is how, and I think through programming and events and certainly a reasonably priced venue space for artists and craftsmen. The Civic Center.
So artists and craftsmen are going to move into the Civic Center?
Well, in a sense, sure. I mean, they should embody, the Civic Center should embody the spirit and the creativity of the history and the culture that is here in Santa Fe. We're promoting creative cities. We've had we've been promoting cultural and heritage tourism for many years. So yes, we're hoping that there will be space actually in the new Civic Center. It's a handcrafted in Santa Fe community gallery. It's 2,500 square feet, where we will hope to have ongoing exhibits and demonstrations with local artists and craftsmen alongside the conferences and conventions that will come into town, so that we can always display in some fashion, you know, at least the artistic talents and components that we have to offer. So I think that cultural and heritage tourism in that new Civic Conference Center would be the best way to do that. I think that could benefit the local artists and craftsmen, cottage industry.
We're talking to Miguel Chavez in District 3, running for re-election to his city council seat. Everybody talks about crime, especially residential crime, public safety, people feeling safe in their houses and so on. What do you think is the nature of the problem, and what should be done about it, and what's already being done?
Well, see, I talked about what was good that was happening, and now this is like the kind of downside of what's happening, because you have this growth, right? And you have increased density, you have increased population, you have a strain on budget for public safety. About 2 years ago, I believe it was around 2 years ago, we did a public safety tax to increase property tax, specifically for public safety, to address safety concerns, public safety concerns, issues of crime, domestic violence, crimes against women. Certainly we had a rash of that during last summer. And so we've increased the budget. We've come up with short-term solution, sort of band-aids, if you will, in response to what was going on. As an example, both the city and the county funded a safe ride program to provide a safe ride home, especially for women. And so that was worked really well. We've increased again the budget $1.5 million through property tax. So now what we need to do is be sure that we allocate those revenue, that revenue, and especially in the area of public safety as it relates to neighborhoods, that needs to be increased. Neighborhood watch needs to be enhanced. Growth within, as using District 3 as an example, on one end of District 3 we have infill. That is more of an issue as it relates to new growth and how vacant parcels are developed within existing neighborhoods. And then on the other end of District 3, along Airport Road in the southwest sector, you have sprawl. It is the issue and development that's approved between the city and the county under overlapping jurisdictions. One side of Airport Road is city-county, and the other side kind of county-city. It's a real
borderline area.
Right. It's a very hard area to manage. And so those are the downsides. See, we've just adopted the Southwest Area Master Plan, which will address some of the sprawl issues in the Southwest sector along Airport Road. And then we're dealing with some type of neighborhood conservation district or neighborhood planning areas where a neighborhood, existing neighborhood, could have some self-determination to decide how their neighborhood should change, when it should change, if it should, you know, whatever the issues are, short-term rentals, you know, vacant parcels being developed, you know, their role in that is, I think, is very important.
Let's talk about water and development. On the one hand, there's an ever-increasing need for housing, which is why we talk about affordable housing and development and infill and all of that. On the other hand, there is a limited amount of water in a desert, and so you can't grow infinitely. How do you regulate growth, especially without, I don't know if it's possible, but without making housing prices shoot through the roof?
It's a very, very fine balancing act, and I think that you have to tie growth to water and water availability in some fashion. We've talked a lot about conservation, and conservation usually is the first and most dependable, most cost-effective way to extend your water budget and your water planning.
We've already done a lot of conservation. I mean, every toilet within 1,000 miles has been retrofitted.
Right, and we're doing more because we have front loading washing machines on the water side. We're going to start doing more water harvesting and cisterns and gray water and using effluent. One of the things that I've been working on is an effluent line in the southwest sector that will pipe treated effluent into the southwest sector for parks, open space, and maybe even some of the shared parks that we have with the schools. So we need to, and you're right, and most of the conservation, though, really I think has been done on the residential side. And we've been a model programs for conservation.
What about you're saying government and commercial have not caught up so well?
We need to do more in those areas. Commercial, retail, government needs to do more. A lot of the commercial and businesses are doing more. They're changing their ice making machines. They're serving water in smaller glasses. They're serving less ice, which I think is great. There are supposed to be tables on all of these, you know, in all the restaurants,
a table tent
that says this business serves water only on request.
Right.
So I think we've gotten away from some of those things. Moving away from conservation, though, we do need to have some sort of a budget in mind, both for individual residential budgets, commercial and business water budgets that allocate so much water per month, and then over that, surcharge or something needs to happen. On the city side, as we consider new growth, we have a 40-year water supply plan that we've been working on that will include in the inventory all of our domestic supply, our reservoir, our well field, and then supplement that with the imported water that we will be bringing through the San Juan Chama Diversion Project. That still doesn't say that we're going to be okay. We still really have to manage even that new imported water. So with that account, we have a bank account. We have so much water. We need to balance the number of permits that we issue in a quarter, right? I believe, and have a budget for that area the same as you would for an individual household budget, and determine where you want to allocate that water. Is it for affordable housing? Is it for commercial uses or neighborhood center uses? What type of uses are on the top of that priority for the limited water that you do have?
We've got just a little under a minute left. I'd like to just let you say anything you want to the listeners of KSFR.
Time's so short.
I know.
I really appreciate the support that I've received from the residents in District 3. I've enjoyed my work on the council now over the last 8 years. I'm asking for the voters in District 3 to allow me to continue that work on their behalf. And so we know that the election is March 4th. And just asking people to really first get out to vote. We need the participation. And hope that you would consider me for re-election March 4th. Thank you.
Miguel Chavez, thank you so much for being with us. And ladies and gentlemen, voting is both a privilege and a duty. Go out and vote on March 4th. And if you're not registered to vote, go out and register. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, the Jazz Experience. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We'll see you tomorrow. Ciao.